War Room, Impeachment. With Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment, 28 December, Year of Our Lord 2019. It's Saturday. We're live from Capitol Hill, just yards away from where Nancy Pelosi, I think, impeached the President of the United States a couple of weeks ago, but we're uncertain. We're talking about that today. War Room Impeachment, Episode 91. Raheem Kassam of UKIP and Brexit fame, now within 30 days or a couple of about a month of actually leaving the European Union. We're going to have a lot of that discussion over our New Year's Eve weekend. Also, Jason Miller, the senior communications strategist for Trump 2016, the greatest come-from-behind victory in the history of presidential politics, and also the communications director during the transition, one of the top conservative communication experts. We're live on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Radio Network, americasvoice.news globally on a streaming platform, and of course, Newsmax TV, the fastest growing cable news operation in the country. Okay, I want to get, before we get to today, lot going on, right? Everybody thought these holiday shows might be a little slow. Au contraire. And I want to go, Jason Raheem, first to the hater media, right? And not exactly President Trump's cheerleading section. First off, the New York Times, it's one of my favorite papers. Of course, according to the president, is the failing New York Times, right? Right-hand column, right here, lead story. Stocks on cusp of registering 22-year high. That would be bad. And what they don't talk about is that that was the sugar high of the internet craze back at the end of the Clinton administration, right? With the, you know, pets. Anything had .com on it was running out of control. It was frothy. We're at a 22-year high, tens of trillions of dollars of wealth created, and not just for the top 1%, but also for companies that could issue equity cheaper and use the use of proceeds to build factories and other things, which eventually they're going to do. Wall Street Journal, not exactly a huge cheering section for the president's populist policies. Lead story, workers' pay rises as labor markets tighten. The labor markets tighten is because of his immigration strategies, and he always said the wages would eventually rise, and this is both for skilled and unskilled workers. And as Steve Cortez points out, blue-collar workers ahead of white-collar workers, labor ahead of management. And everybody should know, the Wall Street Journal, this is what Wall Street fears most, is rising wages, right? Rising wages. So this is fantastic. And then at the end, in the Jeff Bezos Amazon Washington Post, lead story, populist turn for Trump in 2019. He's now going to focus on populist economic policies. In fact, Jeff Stein wrote this, but I think it was dictated by Peter Navarro or Curtis Ellis, right? One of the two. It's a must-read. We're going to get them all up on warroom.org because I got to tell you, this decade is ending in a populist firestorm.
How do they let you guest edit three papers today, by the way?
I say what?
How do they let you guest edit three papers?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, I knew last night this is stuff happened because his policies are coming together. The world's in a populist revolt. And we're going to get into my favorite gal, AOC, later. But is it populism on the right or populism on the left? I just want to tell my brethren populist on the left, hello, workers' pay rises as labor markets tighten. Right.
So to that point, Steve, in the Washington Post, we actually get a twofer today because there's actually an opinion piece from Megan McArdle with the headline, "The Best Gift Americans Got This Year? A Good Economy."
Wow. That's a hater, too.
Yeah. There's a great line in there that Megan has. In 2019, the wages of rank and file workers not only grew faster than the economy did, but also outpaced the raises their supervisors collected. Going to the whole point you said that
this is on Sunday. Tomorrow, we're going to try to have more of the economics guys back on. Last Sunday's show has got such rave reviews of people, blew my phone up. We had Jason Trenert, one of the top hedge fund guys. We had Steve Cortez. And of course, we had in studio Peter Navarro. It just walked through the economic nationalism and populism of President Trump, and it's on fire right now. I mean, you couldn't end a year or couldn't end a decade with the convergence of forces underpinning his policies, right, that are coming to the forefront.
And there's an important, we're going to come back to a little bit of the polling that's going on with all the impeachment drama and President Trump in a little bit, but keep in mind those jobs numbers from December 7th. Remember we had that Friday, December 7th, those jobs numbers. We're going to come back to this in a few minutes here, but just keep that in mind as we talk about the economy.
I also want to, because you've been around the Republican Party for a long time, but the underpinnings of this, and this is a must-read story in the Washington Post, the subtitle is Rewriting GOP's Economic Playbook. I mean, these are the policies that were laughed and mocked and ridiculed. And I don't want to name out the Republican or the conservative pundits that used to get on me in the early days at Breitbart when we were the cutting edge of these kind of populist policies and how it went against traditional Republican orthodoxy. But you've seen this because you were a Cruz guy at one time. You've seen this whole transition now, and I think the point here is that the mainstream media about turning this into a workers' party or turning it into a middle class and workers' party, and everybody said that this uniformity we've now seen on the vote, and that's coming from, hey, what he did was not right, but it's not impeachable, to now this kind of iron phalanx that it was a perfect call and we're back of him. The mainstream media misses the fact that they think it's this Twitter feed that intimidates these congressmen and senators are so sheepish because they don't want to be at the receiving end. The reality is these are savvy people, and they understand his policies are working, right? His policies are working, and that's why they're really with the program. Of course, nobody wants to be on the receiving end of some ordinance dropped on you from his Twitter feed, but that's not – the reality is they understand that this is a way to win and consistently win, and you're seeing this kind of transition from what the Republican Party was to what the Republican Party will be.
And ultimately, it's an issue of economic fairness. And when the historians go back and talk about the Trump Revolution and the 2016 campaign, the thing that I think in the long term will play out to be the biggest, it wasn't so much they took on, obviously taking on immigration and build a wall was a big thing, got a lot of buzz, but it was during that summer of 2015 when he threw down on the trade issue and made that this big centerpiece. And what the leaders in Washington, Republican leaders in Washington, found out is that their grassroots base had left them a long time ago. And they're like, wait a minute, NAFTA wiped us out. Look at the upper Midwest. Look where all these factories and look at how it's destroyed all these local economies. And so the base had already shifted, but the folks in D.C. were so checked
out. That's why it's not leadership. You don't see leadership here in Washington. I mean, President Trump is clearly a leader, but the leadership comes from really, that's what populism means. Leadership comes from the people. Now, this is kind of driven folks that, I remember we said back in 2011, 2012, that trade and immigration are just two sides of the same coin. It's just unfair competition for labor.
And it's ultimately, look, it's economic fairness. It's that divide between the haves and the have-nots and hardworking people believing, and rightfully so, that they've been getting ripped off here. And because that's exactly been the case.
And that's why we're about to enter the roaring 20s. We're starting the 20s as a roar, and I happen to think that this 20s is like 100 years ago, it's going to be a combination of the roaring 20s and the 1930s, but we can talk about it later. Before we get to the more mundane part of the politics of this, Raheem, and I thought this was very interesting. You were on yesterday in CNN, and you did get in one because it was a very condensed
Fox.
Thing. Fox, and they want combat the entire time, right? And but you did get in some economic stuff, and that's really what got traction, right?
Well, that was my point, and I don't really know what their point was. I love me some Fox, but it was a bit of a holiday episode.
The reason I thought I was seeing it was two people of color on there debating, right? Why? I don't get the guys in Florida. What's with the turtleneck?
Maybe he had a hickey.
The turtleneck. But the turtleneck.
No, you two guys are the two spiffiest guys on there, but he was from Florida, right? I didn't get the turtleneck.
But for anyone, so Raheem, who did awesome in his Fox appearance, the Democrat that he was up against, this bro,
so
was
smart guy.
Literally, he was wearing the turtleneck with the blazer, and it's like, it's in Florida with the Florida towers behind him. And I'm like, buddy. I'm like, lose the turn. Like, you're
right,
in Florida.
Right,
it's 80 degrees.
He knew he was up against Raheem, so he knew he had to be more Natalie attired.
You can't do it. Why try? Just might as well show up in a Caps jersey or something, right? Look, a very short segment, but the idea was what Warren and these guys are proposing versus what Trump has done. But for whatever reason, nobody wanted to actually get into what Trump has done. So I said very simply, you know, he goes on stage at the rallies and he says, you know, people come to me in the Oval Office, world leaders from all around the world, they say, how do you have this economic success? And I have no doubt that that is actually true. There's a lot of embellishment in Trump world, but I don't believe that to be an embellishment.
No, it's true.
Look at this economy. It's unreal. Nobody thought it was possible.
But then you got the dagger in, and Germany's going into a recession.
Germany's going into recession.
One of the reasons Germany
probably actually was in recession for a minute in the last quarter.
One of the reasons Germany's going into recession is once again back to China. What is it called? The middle schmeiten, the middle company, the 500 companies that basically drive family-owned emerging growth companies that drive the German economy. They have been eviscerated by China. They've been eviscerated. These are manufacturing tool makers. You know, it's the backbone of the German manufacturing economy. They didn't protect them from China. They understand it's a problem now. It's one of the reasons that the German economy is getting beaten up. You're not going to see that under President Trump, and particularly as we make this populist turn for the finish line here in 2020. Let's go to the politics then.
There's a very interesting dovetailing going on as well, because as Britain leaves the European Union in 2020, France and Germany are fighting over who has to make up the billions upon billions into the EU coffers that Britain is now not going to be paying into anymore. And actually all the focus now is going on to the economics and going, well, hold on a minute. We turned over this whole thing to being a German-led economy several decades ago.
Yeah.
They got hollowed out by China. Why would we want to take more German leadership in Europe? So people are trying to figure out how now, with Britain out, they actually reconstitute the thing.
Well, I want to come back to that. Maybe tomorrow we'll go through this. But if you see, at the very moment that the UK is going to step out and then cut trade deals and look at a whole new trade pattern, you've got the Franco-German project, right, which is the EU. Now you've got France, and this is where Macron has tap danced around this. Now you're getting actually into restructuring the French economy. You're seeing the strikes over the holidays, and really a brutal strike is when the workers on the trains to say, "Hey, I'm sorry about Christmas," because you know France is Paris particularly, in the hinterland is very Christmas oriented for the holiday season. Said, "Hey, tough break. Sorry, the trains are not going to work. It's going to be your problem." But that's labor unrest, and Macron is not the kind of guy you want
and we should pay,
a neoliberal, you know, pencil neck is not a guy you want doing this.
We should pay very close attention to this, because last time the striking workers went for Mélenchon, they're Bernie Sanders, right? And split the kind of populist vote between Marine Le Pen and Mélenchon. This time around, they're not going to make the same mistake. And so I suspect you'll see a lot of people pull to the French right and get rid of Macron.
Well, and this is what Marine Le Pen and the others have got. You got to line your economics up. You got to get your economics lined up with your culture and immigration. This is the Trump revolution, lined up the economics with the cultural, you know, with the immigration, and to protect workers, make it all around a worker-centric thing about, hello, rising wages, right? Boom, that's when you win. That's why populism on the left's not going to work.
It's not just a key that unlocks votes, although it does. It's a key that unlocks the power of the economy.
This is the point. And he add on top of that, which Macron, I do appreciate, tried to do, although he didn't sell it correctly. Remember, what we've gotten into in the West is this kind of big corporatist, big finance capitalism with big government, right? That's the stasis we had. To break that up, populism on the right also is unlocking the animal spirits for what I call everybody's side hustle. Entrepreneurism. Every person, even in a labor union, my father was 50 years with the phone company. My father's 50 years in the phone company. But the entire time, even as labor, you know, blue collar working stiffs, they were always thinking about what's the entrepreneurial thing I can get into, right? Every person wants the side gig. Every person wants the entrepreneurial hustle. That's populism on the right. Populism on the right is entrepreneurial finance, which is when you bring that in with the Trump revolution, is going to take this country to the next stage. And that's what. Speaking of entrepreneurs, let's talk about Hunter Biden. This guy, I'm telling you, he's pure honey badger. He's pure honey badger. The thing yesterday in L.A., right, walking around with the white, when he's a target of but listen, what do you think the odds are? Let's talk about the trial. What do you think the odds are he actually gets called to testify? I'll start with Jason.
Hunter Biden?
Yeah.
He absolutely should.
Well, I know it should. That's 100% he should. 150% he should.
Here's the thing. If there are going to be witnesses, Hunter Biden's getting called.
You think Hunter Biden's higher probability than the whistleblower?
No, whistleblower's like number one, two, and three.
He's the railhead.
Whistleblower's number one, two, and three. I'd put Joe at number four and then Hunter at number five.
Okay, let's talk about this.
And Shifty Schiff at number six.
There's a lot of what's happened in the last 24 hours just on what are we talking about, the trial of the century. Why do you think, first off, let's go to the predicate, Nancy Pelosi is keeping her cards still close to the chest. Why is she not discussing about the timing of when she gets back? You don't see anybody saying, hey, we're going to get back next week and start rolling. It's kind of mystifying. They're back on the 6th or start the 7th. Is she waiting? Is she slow walking this because she needs more evidence?
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, as we've discussed a number of times, this is a witch hunt in search of a witch. They're going to keep this going until they can find some sort of evidence. I mean, the poll numbers are moving in President Trump's direction. He's in much better shape there. This has not played out the way that Pelosi and the Democrats want. And Dan Kildee, a Democrat from Michigan, was on CNN. I think it was either this morning or last night. I was catching the replay of it. And they asked him the question, could this thing go all the way until February? And he's like, yeah. I mean, because they...
That's my point. He said they could hold back before delivering it until the end of January or February.
Yeah, and because simply they don't have what they need yet to convict President Trump. And look, Rasmussen has new polling out saying that 3 out of 4 Americans don't think that President Trump will be removed from office. Even Democrats know this is a pipe dream.
With this kind of economic news and the holidays, you know, we're hearing the holidays could be a blowout fourth quarter here. How does she refocus, particularly people who are back home, and you just know, you talk to these districts, nobody's talking about impeachment. I mean, people on the hard left are, but everybody else is talking about the economy, everybody else is talking about jobs, everybody else is talking about how strong America's finishing the year. How does she possibly try to reposition this communications-wise?
So that's the struggle. That's what no one else can come up with. And, you know, I started to reference this earlier about the poll numbers, but if you look back at where things started to move, both in the Real Clear Politics rolling average of polls as well as 538, it was right after those December 7th jobs numbers that came out. We started seeing the shift right around December 9th for both.
This was the historic jobs number that came out in blue. It was 300,000 new jobs. They reset the old things. And this had all the things about blue collar ahead of white collar, non-college graduate above college graduate. This was the thing about the Trump program really working.
Generational low economic number, unemployment numbers, you know, 50-year low.
Right.
And so ever since December 9th, both in the Real Clear Politics and 538, we've seen a 2.5-point uptick in the opposition to impeachment. And so both of those right now are effectively at 1-to-1. Real Clear Politics has impeachment a little bit underwater, which, by the way, the day that they crossed and it officially went underwater was then when we had all those stories around December 16th of the best week ever. And look, that goes to show you that news coverage does impact poll numbers.
What, Raheem, how do you view this as what's happened in the Senate?
Firstly, I can't believe you let Hunter Biden off like that. Guy's driving a $120,000 car around L.A. on the day after he gets left out of his father's Christmas card, the two things obviously being linked. This wasn't a honey badger move for the media or for us or for Republicans. This was to his dad. This was, hey, I still exist. And I'm driving around.
I didn't catch that part. That's strong.
$120,000 car that you bought me, or that Burisma bought me.
Boxing Day. That.
Did you see? I saw online the $2.5 million pad up in Hollywood Hills.
Yeah, I saw
and they
that.
Showed view. That was a nice looking pad.
No. It's a nice crib. And it had the eternity pool.
That was overlooking
eternity
LA.
Pool or infinity pool. I never know the difference.
Infinity pool.
Yeah. There you go.
Hang on for a second. Is Hunter got daddy issues? Is that what you're saying? Hunter's got daddy issues.
Hunter got a lot of daddy issues both ways.
No, but you're the first guy to bring it. I think it's quite, you're saying he sent a signal. He's not happy.
Yep.
He was once again humiliated, and this time by his dad. Does his father do this? And this gets to the key thing of yesterday. We've got to jump here for a break in a couple of minutes. We're going to come back to in depth of all this. When Biden said, in the same thing with the card. Mm. Is it that he's just not hitting on all cylinders? Is he not listening to his communication strategist? Or is there some sort of zen here I'm missing?
Oh, I don't think there's a zen. I think they're very much playing it by the minute on this. And this was going to bring me to my next point about what you asked the question about Pelosi and what she's doing. Pelosi's looking for the reset button right now. She's looking at how she makes impeachment back what impeachment was several months ago. So she'll be even thinking of, can we actually get the whistleblower to testify? Can we get the second whistleblower? Remember that guy never showed up after
disappeared.
All? The second whistleblower, what happened to him? She'll be looking for OMB whistleblowers, emails, anything she can get to reset this process because it's done. In the current form, it's a flop.
She's lost control of it.
Now, one way you can say that is the mainstream media, if it was hot, They would be in every district with nothing but live reports from people saying he's got to go, he's right. got to go, right. he's a clear and present danger. If you look at CNN and MSNBC, they're covering every story but this. Yeah. You got people in New Zealand dying in volcanoes. You've got the helicopter crash. I mean, they're going to every emergency. You don't see anybody with a microphone back in home districts. Which, if this was resonating, CNN would literally have an army of reporters out there building a crescendo that when it came back, Trump has got to go. He's a clear and present danger. This is why we had to move so quickly.
Well, and that goes to the point with the Rasmussen polling, where people know that President Trump is not going to be removed from office. They know that Speaker Pelosi and the Democrats did not lay out a valid case for the removal of President Trump. This thing is, it's so transparent that this is a political witch hunt.
Okay, now we go from not removed to the story, what was in Politico today. Is it a quick acquittal or is it exoneration? Is Trump do this for history and for this movement? You know, if you're going to keep this rolling, right? In every paper now, if you go to any paper, they're talking about the populist, you know, surge into the 2020s. If you're going to keep this going, do you do this for history? Do you do this? You know, I got a bunch of people lit me up yesterday about saying President Trump's a student of history. He is a student of history. He understands his historical significance. He understands he's transformative. Do you see today, look like the cake has been baked in the 24 hours that we've talked, that now you see a solidification on the Republican side, quick and dirty?
Yeah, so my analysis of this is that Senator McConnell has already put the edict down to Republican senators. It's going to be quick and dirty. We're going to get this over with. But the Republican senators, many of them, don't want to go out there and directly oppose President Trump on this. But here's the reason why they're wrong on this, is because if we don't go and completely snuff this out and completely exonerate President Trump, the Democrats are never going to stop. Anyone who thinks that we can
this
just...
This is the point. Why don't they understand this?
If they think that we're going to be able to just sweep this under the rug...
What do you mean?
It's not going away.
Maybe they do, and they want a limping Trump in 2020 so that they have more control, so that they have more say, so that they
this
have
is
more.
My point about the negotiated acquittal, that it's the price, it's the conditional, the conditionality of the acquittal. Yeah. Do you buy that? Do you really buy that?
I do buy that. I think, you know, it's built into your system. Is the tension between the branches. But secondly, I mean, think about how much it's built into the GOP. This is a guy that had to pull the GOP kicking and screaming into the 2016
election.
You're
saying a lot of those senators are not into the... And this would lessen how populist he gets in 2020. Okay, take a short commercial break. We're going to be back with more of this intense debate and commentary in a second. Raheem, how do people find out more 24 hours a day about this?
Warroom.org. We've got the stories up there that we've been talking about so far this morning, so you can catch up with all the economic news and more. www.warroom.org.
If I do say so myself, you and the team are doing a fantastic job of just updating this nonstop. Okay, Steve Bannon, War Room, will be back in a moment.
War Room. Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back on Saturday, the 28th of December, year of our Lord 2019. It's War Room Impeachment. We're live from Capitol Hills. We are 7 days a week. Episode 91, Jason Miller, Raheem Kassam, Stephen K. Bannon, John Frederick's Radio Network, the Salem Broadcast Radio Network nationwide, americasvoice.news, streaming in the United States and throughout the world, and of course, Newsmax TV. And also on the weekends, get the best of the War Room. Okay.
It's a short show.
The short show. The short-sheeted, right? Yeah. Before we go on, I want to go back to Hunter Biden, because I think Hunter Biden's, it's not to pick on Hunter Biden as an individual, but he's emblematic of something very deep, and it, kind of what this impeachment is about, right? This is one thing we have hammered on, right, for 10 years at the start of this decade, crony capitalism. What was the whole Tea Party populist revolt about? The permanent political class, the crony capitalism. They saw in Obama, and President Obama is supposed to be progressive, the first series of bailouts, right? The bailout of Wall Street. And look, President Obama didn't create the financial crisis, but he came in, and what the questions were, not just the bailout, we know the $4 trillion and more that went to Wall Street to bail them out in liquidity. Remember, it was the auto dealership bailouts. It was all of this. The Tea Party started as a reaction to the bailouts. And what was that about? Crony capitalism. Hunter Biden is what the founders warned us about. We didn't fight a revolution against an aristocracy. At that time, we were going to be the jewel in the crown, not India, not the Raj. It was going to be North America, right? They had just fought a war with the French to make sure that they dominated it. And the warning was, we're not going to be part of this empire. And the reason is we'd rather be free men and women and take our own deal of working class people making their decisions than being part of a aristocracy. And what Hunter Biden is the, you know, the princeling. Right. They got this in China now. It's one of the big reactions why the kids in the streets in Hong Kong are fighting, because you got the princelings in Beijing, these do nothing deadbeats. Right. That just draft off. Look, in China, 1.4 billion people, there's 90 million communists. There's only a couple thousand making a decision. It's 12 families that run it. It's the same deal everywhere. This is the problem with the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has not had their internal civil war. It shouldn't be Raheem Kassam and Jason Miller and Steve Bannon hammering on this. It should be the pillow. You know, oh, it's supposed to be so bloody. BS. Where are the Democrats attacking what Hunter Biden and what Hunter Biden represents with Joe Biden? Where is Bernie Sanders? Where is Miss AOC? Right? Where is Miss AOC in attacking this? This is privilege. What he represents is privilege. Talk about that privilege.
She, by the way, AOC is cashing her Tom Steyer checks. That's what she's doing.
Whoa. But just saying, AOC, the future president candidate, as political. Just saying.
Steve, I want to jump in on this, yeah, on this privilege comment for a moment, because we see yesterday two massive things. We see Joe Biden with the Des Moines Register at board saying that he would defy any subpoena that was sent to him in this Senate trial. And I don't think this is Joe losing his faculties.
Oh, you don't?
No, I think this is Joe Biden saying, I am bigger than the law. I can do anything that I want.
Oh, you're saying that this is Joe Biden. This gets in my thesis. This is Joe Biden as crony capitalist privilege.
Yes.
I'm a Senate. This is a club. I'm not.
Right. And so then the tie-in, look, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So you have Hunter Biden, who's obviously in a massive media S-storm, so to speak, and he's rolling around in L.A. I think Raheem may have found the jacket, but he has a $120,000 car pushing around, and he's New York Post did a big write-up the other day talking about his $2.5 million place in Hollywood Hills, which during the commercial break I referred to something that may have been featured on Yo MTV Cribs. Vish, our producer, was kind enough, and Raheem called me Boomer to correct me.
Okay, Yo Boomer.
Yeah, there was Yo MTV Raps with Fab Five Freddy, remember that, and or Dr. Dre and Ed Lover.
No, but that's okay.
And MTV Cribs, and then there was Pimp My Ride, which exhibit. That's a whole other conversation. But Hunter Biden,
I was watching EWTN, but that's okay.
Right, Hunter Biden, $2.5 million place. And if you check this out on New York Post, they have pictures of the entire
house. As the Post want to do.
I mean, this thing has the infinity pool. It's overlooking the Hollywood Hills.
It's more
Hills.
Than $2.5 million.
It's way more.
Three people should know too. You're not in the Hollywood Hills to coach Little League. It's players only.
Right. And here's the thing. If someone's an entrepreneur, if someone, invests smart, if they earn the money, we want, it's like the American dream is for everyone to have a house like that. But what are Hunter Biden's, what are his core skills? His core skills are being Joe Biden's son.
Access. You know this in the China thing when they took him over in Air Force Two. It's access to Joe Biden, who's going to negotiate the deal for President Obama about cyber intrusions and about the militarization of South China Sea that you're going to sign in the Rose Garden that the Chinese are not going to, live up to. That's what you want access to. You want access to decision makers. That's what he is. He's you got 6 degrees of separation. He's a half a degree, right? How bad is it, Raheem, about his whole the lifestyle? Because I think it's in your face of, where's Bernie? Where's Elizabeth Warren? Where's AOC? Look, I'm big supporters of populism and populism on the left. I think your economic policies are insane. I think your immigration policies don't work. But I like the fact you're populist. However, if you're going to be populist, you have to go after the permanent political class and you have to clean up your own house first.
Yeah, they can't quite be populists with all of this stuff because
don't pick on Mayor Pete in the wine cave and some don't make a big deal about the wine cave and some of these tech entrepreneurs stroking $2,500 checks or whatever. That's all, don't talk about the wine cave. Elizabeth Warren, where are you on Hunter Biden?
Yeah. And the problem they have is that ideology creeps into everything and ends up taking it over. That's why the climate change stuff has become sort of anti-populist. They're actually peeing people off by banging on about this and forcing them to pay for it. And it goes back to what Jason was saying. I think it's so true, right? Joe Biden thinks he's above the law. Hunter Biden believes he's beyond reproach. You know, it's the same mentality. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Here you have a guy who's out in L.A. The day after his father leaves him off the Christmas card. He wants to go out in L.A. I love, by the way, the Page Six reporting on this. They say he looked as pregnant as his partner did. You know, leading with his belly, walking around the street, happy as Larry, checking into his $120,000 car, picking up a packet of menthol cigarettes. This guy gives zero Fs about this right now. He is in your face. And that's why at the beginning you said, oh, he's Honey Badger. The only question that remains, guys, he was at a 14-screen movie theater where Cats, Star Wars, and Little Women were playing. What did they see?
Well, you know, and the other thing about the in-your-face aspect of this, he bought this $2.5 million place on June 19th of this year. So his dad is in the middle of this presidential run. He's going through Iowa and shaking hands. He knows he's in the scrutiny for everything that's going on. He's like, hey, I'm going to go drop $2.5 million that I made from this all this shady Burisma and Chinese stuff.
Nancy Pelosi's market-tested, focus group-tested buzzword phrase that we heard in the well, and we did it on the show and the special we did about the debate: nobody's above the law. Nobody's above the law. Nancy, where are you, Mrs. Master Political Strategist? Where are you on Joe Biden? He's leading, and this is a disgrace. He's leading in the Democratic primary. And it's President Trump every now and again has got to tweet something, or it's war of impeachment has got to say something, or it's another one, Steve Bannon's harangues has got to say something on TV. Why is the Democrat? This is why it's a pillow fight. This is why they never include. And a note to Democrats: you're not going to win if you don't throw down in the head. The story about it's going to get bloody. It's going to get nasty. Oh, calling out Mayor Pete for his wine cave? No, that's a pillow fight. Okay. Going after Joe Biden for his corruption, okay? Joe Biden is corrupt. And go back to why he approved all the trade deals. That's the other part of corruption. Saying he's middle-class Joe the entire time, but selling out to the vested interest, the established order, and the trade deals. He's corrupt from top to bottom.
Well, and is this why you see the difference between Joe Biden's national polling and his polling in the early primary states?
100%.
Because the people on the ground understand it, but the media doesn't get it. The Democrats on stage with him don't go for him. He's actually pretty vulnerable. And they're not going after that button that would just remove him from the race. Steve, I don't know if it was you gaslighting her when you called her a master political strategist about 3,000 times in our first few episodes, but she seems to have bought into the Bannon hype, right? And the media bought into it as well, and she kind of is overshot on this one now, which is why I say...
What do you mean overshot?
She thought...
they had a good buzz. Listen, the thing, America's about fairness.
Yep.
One of the things they did was brilliant. Nobody's above the law. Our point is that President Trump was a perfect... This is why Trump's strategy from the beginning was brilliant. It's a perfect call. Mm-hmm. I didn't do anything wrong. In fact, this is why I was hired, and this is a policy debate.
Yep.
Okay? They understand to get it back and think nobody's above the law. My whole point is it's going to backfire on them because now they're looking at their leading candidate, which they refuse to take on, and it's the populist left's responsibility. It's Warren and it's Bernie Sanders' responsibility to go after him. And if he doesn't, AOC ought to be up at Venice and she ought to be lighting up Joe Biden in the first 10 minutes of her speech.
But that's the point. That can only work. Nobody's above the law, and quid pro quo can only work if your leading candidate isn't also implicated, right? It's, you know, they did so much focus testing on this. Didn't anybody think for a second quid pro quo kind of sounds like quid pro Joe, and they could use that against us?
I think this also shows the innate corruption of somebody like Rachel Maddow. This is why Rachel Maddow is the neoliberal, carries the water for the Clintons in the apparatus. She did it in 2016 against Bernie, and they're doing it again. Mm. They will not turn on these centrist candidates.
Look, there's a reason why Michael Moore, everyone's favorite filmmaker, is out there saying that President Trump, there's a great chance that he's going to win.
Do we have that clip? Can we play any of that? The Moore is right on. spot on.
Yeah,
right?
So to set the stage for folks, so Michael Moore, who's endorsed Bernie Sanders, and he's basically, it's Bernie Sanders supporter, says Bernie Sanders is not going to win.
Michael Moore, by the way, I got to know him after 2016 because he approached me about how we won, because he was saying in 16, Trump's going to win. Remember that? And he was. They went crazy. They actually isolated him in the 16 because he kept saying Trump was going to win.
And that's why Trump tweeted out. I believe it was this morning, and he said, you know, no, or last night he said, no one's ever called him crazy.
And Michael Moore is also a guy in 18. This is where I met him. Was telling these guys, don't worry about the Senate. Don't worry about these governor races. Focus on the House. The House is the weapon we need to get it.
And he said, look, he said that President Trump is in great position to win 2020. His Midwest support hasn't dropped an inch. And I think it was pretty telling. I mean, he's pointing out, and this goes to that whole point of the...
Well, not just an inch. He also said something that in Michigan, which he knows because he lives in Upper Michigan, where he has a film festival, he said, they're more rabid today than they were in 16. Not that he hasn't lost anything. Moore's ringing the fire bell in the night saying, guys... These guys are more committed, and it's different. The rallies are actually a snapshot of what reality is on the streets in the small towns of Michigan.
Yeah, and he said, the places will Trump win, but yeah, there's going to be a much higher percentage. He's talking about people turning out like California, New York, but obviously they're already going to go Democratic. But to those Midwestern states, I mean, Trump is going to go and win those.
He also brought up something that very few people talk about. In Michigan is an example. There's other examples. In Michigan, I think there was 89,800 people who voted down ballot for Democratic candidates that did not vote. This is President Trump's, what in the hell do you have to lose, right? Why do you keep backing? You may not vote for me, but why are you voting for her? You know what you're going to get. And Michael Moore goes, hey, if everybody just shows up and does it. But I think this cuts deeper. What Moore's not connecting the dots. The reason they're not doing it, Michael Moore, is because of what Joe Biden represents, what Hillary Clinton represents, is that innate corruption inside the Democratic Party, right, that has not been addressed.
And I think we can't overlook the fact that Democrats are not satisfied with their current field. I mean, look, the person who's making these comments is a Bernie Sanders endorser. I mean, Michael Moore has endorsed crazy Bernie, and he's out there saying Trump is going to win. There's a reason why AOC is on the front page of Politico, and they're talking about her presidential aspirations. And we know she can't be VP for Bernie this time because she's not old enough, as someone informed her after her interview. But
no, she said it before. She said it in the interview. She
caught herself.
She caught herself.
All right, but let's be fair.
Okay. Before we leave this, let's go to Blumenthal and some of what the Democratic senators are saying. Are they throwing that out there for Schumer, or what, the Democratic senators about the trial? What are they telling us?
Actually, this might be the first smart thing that Don Eng Dick, Richard Blumenthal, who made up his Vietnam war record.
He triggers the president for some reason, right?
He really does.
because the president saw him so much in New York City at the time when he was there. For some reason, this guy gets under his skin, doesn't
he? Yeah, so Don Eng Dick, for anyone who missed the story, he's out there saying that 5 to 10 of his Republican colleagues that he talks to have quote-unquote serious doubts about McConnell's Senate trial strategy. So I'm throwing the challenge flag. I'm going to say that him talking to 5 to 10 Senate Republicans who are confiding in him, that's about as legitimate as his Vietnam record. I mean, there's no chance that a Republican's like, hey, Don Eng Dick, do you want to hang out and I'll go and tell you where I disagree with Mitch McConnell? But here's the thing that Don Eng Dick did that was so smart. He knew how to trigger the media on a slow news day, on a slow weekend. And so all the TVs are going with it this morning and everyone's talking about, are there cracks in the foundation? Could Republicans be splitting off? Fact of the matter is they're not, but Don Eng Dick knows how to push the buttons here.
What do we want to clean up here? But we've got a couple minutes left in the show. We got so much we got to get to. Where do we go next?
All on you. What about that? What about that? The poll that we saw the other day, the ridiculous, ridiculous poll that Mediaite wrote up as the end of days poll. I mean, I thought that was absolutely ridiculous.
The
Microsoft one.
Yeah, Drudge linked to this. It had it up in the left column, but took it down pretty quickly. Is it because of the? Let's talk about that poll because I think it got people by shock. This is when 55% of the American people, 55% of the American people, wanted President Trump impeached and removed. That had a half-life of about 30 minutes, and then people question actually what the daily tracking poll is.
Yeah, that's right. And that it bears mentioning because it reminds people, hey, always be skeptical about the things you're seeing and why you're seeing them. This is a tracking poll apparently done by Microsoft, but actually done by another firm for Microsoft. And when you go into, when you follow the actual trail, which means you go to the bottom of every single person's story and then their subsequent story that you get linked to and then their subsequent story, you finally get to the research and the methodology. And the research and the methodology on a poll like this, I mean, if they're good polls, they're open about their numbers. They're open about how many people they've gone to, what their weighting is on everything, what their margin of error is on everything. Then they then show you the cross tabs, which are the questions, the answers, per demographics, everything. This is more like voodoo. This is some chop shop analytics firm that you go to and you say, hey, I really need a poll that shows Trump losing by 55%. Can you get it for us? And what happens is here is that because it's got the name Microsoft on it, because it's branded MSN, the media goes, oh my goodness, a Microsoft poll has shown this. It was actually an online survey. I can do an online survey and get any response I want. You know, I did an online survey on my Facebook page a day ago. I said, should Nigel Farage get a knighthood? Yes or hell yes?
Well, who won?
Hell yes.
Yes. I want to talk about the polling for a second. What they did in the run-up to the actual impeachment itself was to focus group bribery, focus group extortion. They realized they had certain things. Nobody's above the law, right? Wrap themselves in the Constitution, you know, talk about the Pledge of Allegiance, all of that, right? This was a very coordinated media strategy with the political strategy. They couldn't deliver the facts, and that's what they had to go for, you know, abuse of power versus bribery. That's where they had to go for obstruction of Congress versus obstruction of justice. They couldn't deliver on certain things. However, when you look at the polls, is this in hang fire right now? Are we, as you see the polls, you've seen the Real Clear Politics, do you believe, has there been, obviously the big change that was getting against President Trump has been stopped and thwarted. But where do you think we stand today? Is it a hang fire? Is it basically 50-50, or is this trending towards the president? Are we now in stasis again, waiting the trial of the century?
Look, the country is obviously very divided along partisan lines, has been since 2016, even going back even before 2016. And that's where we are today. And what's happened is when Speaker Pelosi came out and introduced the articles of impeachment, we saw a big uptick in support for impeachment. But the two main trackers where they're doing kind of the rolling averages of a number of different polls, which Real Clear Politics.
As a politician, to tell people at home, the grassroots watchers, as a political strategist, walk them through how you look at polls and what's important in polls.
Yeah. So number of things. Polling. You can't do a head-to-head, say, here's the YouGov poll versus here's the NBC Wall Street Journal, because everybody uses different methodology. So the thing as a campaign strategist that you look for are the trend lines. And the trend lines are important because that's where you're going to see the movement and you're going to see things. And that's why some of these and also, too, we know it's very important we go into the swing states and the swing districts to really go and break it down, because California, New York,
so things. Overweight things, right?
So, but the things that really stood out, so Real Clear Politics currently has it at 48% against impeachment. This is on the rolling average, 47.1% for it. So very divided. The 538 currently has it 46% against, but 47.8% for. So they're not that far off. They're both basically within the margin of error. And again, the two big points where they really started to shift right after those December 7th jobs numbers came out, those once in a generation jobs numbers, we saw the people opposing impeachment shoot up by 2.5 points. Same increase in both polls. So now it's basically at a 50-50. Notable, neither 538 nor Real Clear Politics include this sham MSN poll in their rolling averages. So I think that really tells you something.
They don't include because that's just a survey. They won't include a survey.
It's not a real poll.
It's a daily 1,500 response online survey. That's not a poll.
Let's go. We got about a minute and a half left. I want to talk about the site, what people can see. And tomorrow we're going to try to get into more of this economic nationalism. We've got a lot of stuff within. Going to have a couple of great summary shows about the decade in back of us, this kind of the beginning of this kind of populist nationalist revolt, the very beginning of it. And then we're going to talk about, on our New Year's Day show, the Roaring Twenties. We're about to start a new decade, right? And it's going to be... if you think this stuff's been intense or crazy, you haven't seen anything. We start off with the trial of the century, a massively important election in Taiwan on January 11th, the trial of the century of the president, and that just kicks off a season.
The Roaring Twenties, by the way, were supposed to be the Freezing Twenties. The Guardian in 2004 reported that Britain will be plunged into a Siberian climate by 2020. I just wanted to get that in there.
You love rolling that in. What talk to us about the site.
Site is rocking and rolling today, as it always is. www.warroom.org. Not just all the latest news as it pertains to impeachment and the 2020 campaign. They are inextricably linked, of course, but also how you can download the show, which really helps us. Leave a review, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify. If you're already subscribed to one, hey, why not subscribe on the other? Give us a review. It really helps, and we really appreciate you for it.
Closing comments.
President Trump, I want to make sure everyone saw his tweet from last night. Hillary should give it another try, but this time, don't forget Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, North Carolina, and others. God bless Donald J. Trump. I mean, best president. I love this guy.
Best ever. It's just pure heckle. Okay, Worm impeachment. We'll be back live tomorrow.